Grimes produced a pair of automatic pistols from somewhere, checked to be sure they were loaded, and then passed one to Connolly without a word. Since the security detail were carrying M4 carbines, that left Anya the only one in the group without a firearm. Fine with her. She had her own weapon, should she need it. The security team fanned out around the three of them, resuming their diamond formation, but this time with Connolly, Grimes, and Anya in the center. Moving slowly and quietly, the group made its way up the ridgeline and drew closer to the top. Gardner gave the signal. They got down on their bellies and crawled the rest of the way to the top. From that vantage point, they looked down into the wadi on the other side. Gardner had lived up to his reputation and taken them right to the raiders' camp. Anya counted 12 men around the fire below them, their horses tied up nearby. They appeared to be armed, some with curved swords they'd used during the attack on the archaeologist's camp less than an hour before, and some with what appeared to be AK-47s. A few of them were tending to the wounds of those who had been injured in the fight, but most of them seemed to be talking with a man who appeared to be their leader. They were too far away to hear clearly, but Anya thought they were speaking in French? Finally, the leader turned and disappeared inside a brightly colored tent that stood at a distance from the others. Anya leaned toward Grimes.
Now what?
Stay here and guard Connolly.
Grimes then signaled for his men to follow him. Anya didn't even have a moment to object as they slipped into the darkness. She moved to go after them, but was brought up short when Connolly grabbed her arm in an unexpectedly powerful grip. He shook his head.
This is supposed to be a reconnaissance, not a damned search-and-destroy mission. What on earth does Grimes think he's doing?
From her position on the ridge, Anya was able to watch as Grimes's men encircled the camp and then moved in silently from all directions, their weapons at the ready. For a moment, she thought they would take the camp without bloodshed.
Les entrants!
But they were spotted by one of the Bedouins, who went for his gun. It was done with such brutal efficiency that Anya realized she had vastly underestimated the security team's capabilities. She guessed they were not just ex-military, but most likely ex-special forces. The gunfire drew the Bedouin leader back out of his tent. He rushed into the center of the camp, drawing his pistol as he came, only to find himself surrounded. For a moment, Anya thought he was going to try to fight, but his good sense must have asserted itself, and he raised his hands over his head. Grimes looked at Hamilton and inclined his head toward the surrendering man. While Grimes covered him with his pistol, Hamilton moved in, disarmed him, and then forced him down on his knees with his hands over his head. Grimes gave the signal for the others to stand down. While Hamilton kept a gun trained on the prisoner, the others relaxed and lowered their weapons. Then, and only then, did Grimes signal for Anya and Connolly to join them. It took a few minutes to clamber down from the ridge, and by the time Anya arrived in the camp, the bodies of the raiders had been dragged to one side and lined up in a row. 11 men, dead in moments. Anya didn't like it at all. The ruthless manner in which the desert raiders had been dispatched brought her earlier concerns back tenfold. This entire expedition was rapidly moving in a direction she wasn't comfortable with.
Give me a few minutes, and we'll know everything we need to about their interest in us, sir.
No. I want to talk to him myself.
That's not a good idea.
I don't care.
Connolly strode forward, forcing Grimes to follow him or be left out of earshot. Anya tagged along as well. Connolly stood looking down at the prisoner kneeling on the ground before him. The other man gazed up at him, his expression unreadable.
Who are you? What are you doing here? I said, who are you? What do you want? Answer me! Who are you?
By this time, the prisoner had apparently grown bored and glanced at the rest of them. His expression didn't change as his gaze passed over Grimes, but when he looked at Anya, he hesitated for the barest fraction of a moment before glancing away. Anya knew that it could have been the fact that she was the only woman among a group of men that caught the prisoner's attention, but her instincts were telling her it was something more than that. She stepped forward and put her hand on Connolly's arm, just as he was opening his mouth to say something else. He stiffened at her touch, but didn't pull away as he glanced at her.
May I try?
Please, be my guest.
The prisoner smirked as she stepped in front of him. She fixed her gaze on his.
Nous savons qui vous êtes, donc pas la peine de mentir.
In French, Anya told the man that they knew who they were, so there was no need to lie about it. There. For just a fraction of a second, the man's pupils had dilated before he'd glanced away, seemingly indifferent to what she'd said. But Anya knew better. He'd understood her. She was about to say something to that effect to Connolly when she abruptly changed her mind. There was something here that she was missing, something important.
Quel est votre nom?
Anya pretended to try again, asking the man his name before giving up with a shrug of her shoulders. The others, apparently, had had enough as well. Connolly whispered something to Grimes before the latter turned back to Hamilton and pointed to a spot on the edge of camp away from everything else.
Take him over there and sit on him until we're ready to go.
Got it, boss. Let's go, knucklehead.
Hamilton grabbed the other man's arm and hauled him to his feet. The prisoner kicked Hamilton in the knee. The prisoner spun around, dropping to one knee, and thrust his hand inside the lip of his boot. When it came out again, he was holding a squat-looking pistol pointed in Connolly's direction. Anya slammed into Connolly. The bullet sped through the spot where he had been standing a split second before. The leader went over backward to lie still in the dirt. For a long moment, no one moved. And then Grimes was kicking the ground in his frustration.
God damn it!
They'd wanted the Bedouin leader alive. It was the only way they were going to get answers. Grimes stalked over to the man's corpse and nudged him with his boot. When he didn't move, Grimes bent down, rolled the man over on his back, and verified that he was indeed dead. He quickly searched the body but came up empty. He rose but stood over the body for a moment, staring down at the man's tanned face. Grimes drew his knife and bent over the body a second time.
Wait a minute, Grimes.
Grimes didn't take the knife to the corpse, just to the corpse's clothing. He pulled the man's tunic away from his chest and then sawed down through it. Grimes spread the fabric apart, exposing the flesh beneath. Where the skin of the man's face and hands was deeply tanned, his chest was a pale fish-belly white, as if he hadn't spent much time in the sun at all.
Someone get me a rag.
A few moments later, one was pushed into his hands. Holding the man's head steady with one hand, he used the other to scrub at the man's forehead. After a moment or two of effort, he stopped.
Oh, I knew it.
Grimes climbed to his feet and stepped away to let the others survey his handiwork. Anya glanced at the body, where Grimes had wiped at the man's flesh with the rag. A circle of pale skin was now plain to see.
What the hell? What's going on, Grimes?
We're being played, that's what's going on. All right. I want to know who these guys are and what they were up to. Get to it.
The bodies were searched to no avail. The tents, however, were another story. If there were any doubts remaining that the group had been masquerading as Bedouins, they were effectively dispelled the minute the team found modern clothing and camping gear, everything from mummy bags to freeze-dried concentrates. The labels had either been cut out or scoured free from most of the equipment, and those few pieces that did still have some kind of branding, such as the packets of dehydrated food, came from companies that distributed worldwide. As such, they didn't provide them with any real information that could be used to identify the assailants. Things got even more interesting when Grimes and Anya searched the leader's tent. Inside, they found the same collection of modern amenities, with the addition of state-of-the-art radio gear. What really caught their attention, though, was the collection of photographs pinned to the canvas walls of the tent. They were all black and white, about 20 images in all. Judging from the graininess of the images, they had been taken from some distance away. Each and every one of the photographs was of Anya. They had been taken at various times of the day, but all of them had been taken during the current expedition, starting almost from the moment the team had left Jerusalem. The first few showed Anya inside the Land Cruiser as they drove out of the city, and from the angle of the image, she guessed they had been taken from a rooftop overlooking the street. Others showed her working at the first dig site, helping unearth the jars of coins they'd found, and later laughing around the campfire during dinner. There were even a few of her standing watching Grimes's men change the tires flattened by the sandstorm.
Well, at least we know they don't want you dead.
Why do you say that?
The man who took these pictures could just as easily have been carrying a rifle instead of a camera. At these ranges, even a semi-competent gunman would have been hard-pressed to miss.
Anya looked at the photos again and realized that Grimes was right. They could have taken her out if that had been their objective. Beck stuck his head inside the tent.
Sir, you're going to want to see this.
Anya followed Grimes outside to where Hamilton stood examining an oversized GPS unit. Or at least, that's what it looked like to Anya.
It's a tracking device. Look at this.
A topographical map of the local area was currently displayed on the screen, and Hamilton pointed to a blinking green dot in the center of it.
That's us.
Hamilton did something to the controls, and the image on the screen changed as the map scrolled sideways for a moment to reveal a blinking red dot.
And that is a target.
Pop-ups on the lower edge of the screen gave coordinate and distance to the target readings. Clearly, the device was picking up a signal from the target, checking the location against a satellite-based GPS system, and translating what it learned into a set of directions. It was like a navigation device for a car. All you had to do was follow the prompts on the screen to take you from one location to the other.
Ever seen one of these before?
Pretty standard tracker. You tag the target with a beacon, switch it on so it starts broadcasting, and then use this baby to follow it wherever it goes.
Beck hefted the handheld device.
Range?
Depends on terrain, signal interference, but generally about 10 miles or so.
That answered the question of how the raiders had managed to follow them from one site to the other without being seen. At some point since taking possession of the vehicles, one or more of them must have been tagged with a radio transmitter that was broadcasting their position. In this case, to fake Bedouins.
Anything else?
The latrine's freshly dug, so they haven't been here very long. Certainly no more than a day at most. The rest of the equipment is off-the-shelf stuff. Nothing that can help us track down where it came from or who bought it.
All right. I don't want a word of this to anyone, least of all the civilians at camp. Keep your mouths shut unless I tell you otherwise. Now sterilize the site and let's get out of here.
Sterilize the site?
It didn't take Anya long to discover what Grimes meant. The bodies of the dead were stacked inside the leader's tent, doused with gasoline from the extra tanks on the back of the Land Cruiser, and set alight. More gasoline was splashed on the other tents, and these too were set alight. The flames quickly engulfed everything. By the time someone found the remains, there wouldn't be anything left to tie Grimes and his men to these men's deaths.
Except me.
Anya realized Grimes was thinking the same thing when he turned to her.
This is covering your ass as well as ours, so I don't want to hear any whining about it when we get back to camp. If you've got a problem, you keep it to yourself.
Understood.
And it was. The truth was that Anya thought the raiders had gotten what they deserved, and she wasn't too broken up about it at all. If she was worried about anyone, it was Grimes. He'd been growing more and more militant the farther they got from civilization, and this latest ruthlessness, while ultimately necessary, concerned her. She had to be ready to react to anything. Back in camp, it took them less than 10 minutes to find the tracking beacon attached to the wheel well of the middle vehicle. It was held on with a set of powerful magnets, but a good sharp tug was all it took to break it free. Grimes pulled out the battery, and the signal stopped transmitting. Simple, really. Half an hour later, Anya sat with Ephraim in the dim light of his tent. She filled him in on everything that had happened since she'd left camp several hours before. When she was finished, Ephraim sat silently for several long minutes. He seemed to be trying to take it all in.
Better them than us, I suppose.
What?
I've lived a long time, my dear. We Jews are no strangers to violence, especially in defense of the greater good. I trust you did everything you could. Sometimes violence happens too quickly for others to stop it, especially when one isn't ready for it. I must say, it's rather disappointing.
What is?
That it turned out to be men in disguise.
As opposed to a 2 millennia-old secret society?
Exactly. Being hunted by the Giborim had a sense of, well, romance to it. To find they were simply men in disguise? How ordinary.
Uh,
What will they do with the prisoner?
I don't know for sure, but my guess is that Connolly will call in his chopper again and they'll turn him over to the authorities when the opportunity arises.
Good. A kidnapping charge is just the thing for a guy like that. If they'd caught them the first time around, perhaps they wouldn't have tried again.
Huh. Could the man from the museum be a member of the group that's been tracking us this whole time? Is that why there were so many surveillance photos of me in the enemy leader's tent?
Anya went back through the attack at the Shrine of the Book. She turned the images of her attacker over in her mind, comparing them to the men she'd seen around the fire at the Raiders' camp earlier that evening.
Were any of them a match? I don't think so. Still, something's nagging at me. Something to do with the fight. What was it?
Sorry. It's been a long day, followed by an even longer night.
You're right. Time to get some sleep, before there isn't any more of the night left. Good night, Ephraim.
Anya returned to her tent. Most people would have been uncomfortable with sleeping in the same spot where just a few hours before someone had tried to kidnap them, but Anya had never been most people. She undressed, slipped into her sleeping bag, and settled down to grab a few hours of shut-eye. But her thoughts kept returning to her encounter in the shrine, a single question holding back the boundaries of sleep.
What am I missing?
Anya, come quick! They're gonna kill him!
The shout brought Anya out of a deep sleep, and she was just in time to see Mike yank his head back out of the door of her tent and dash off. She threw on her clothes and slammed her feet into her hiking boots. Anya emerged from her tent to the sounds of violence coming from the nearby ridge where they had located the ruins of the ancient trading center the day before. She turned and hurried in that direction. Ephraim caught up with her as she scrambled up the path to the excavation site and tried to keep up with her long-legged stride.
What's going on?
I don't know. Stay behind me when we get up there, Ephraim. There's no telling what we'll find.
They crested the ridge and looked out over the plateau where the trading center had once been. Several of the walls still stood, though they were little more than knee-high piles of rocks. A larger building, perhaps a public building or synagogue, once sat near the center of the site, and it was within its crumbling walls that the commotion came from. As Anya drew closer, she saw two of Grimes' security men holding the prisoner they had captured the night before upright between them, the man's arms secured behind his back. Grimes stood in front of him with his right hand clenched tightly in a fist. Blood streamed from the prisoner's nose, and one of his eyes was already swollen shut. Connolly stood a few paces away.
I can keep asking all day, if that's what you want. I don't think you'll be in much shape to hear it after a while, though, so you might as well make this easy on yourself. Where is the treasure?
The treasure?
It was only then that Anya noticed the freshly dug trench running along the crumbling stone wall behind the four men. A large pile of earth sat at one end, and marks in the dirt along the edges of the trench revealed where something heavy had been hauled up from below. Anya couldn't believe it. Someone had unearthed the treasure in the middle of the night. Anya's attention was drawn away from the hasty excavation. She turned just in time to see the prisoner glare at Grimes in defiance.
I told you, we had nothing to do with it.
Stop! No more!
This doesn't concern you, Anya.
Grimes drew his fist back, preparing to strike again. Anya rushed forward and put herself between Grimes and the prisoner.
I said that's enough!
And I said this is none of your business, Ms. Creed. This man has information we need, and I intend to get it.
Connolly, whatever he tells you under duress isn't going to be worth crap, and you know it. There has to be a better way.
This man and his buddies are responsible for killing two of my men and for hijacking our find out from under our noses. I'll be damned if I'm just gonna let that go. Now get the hell out of my way, or so help me—
Grimes.
Sir?
Perhaps there is a better way. Tie him up over there and leave him in the heat until he decides to tell us something.
But—
Would you prefer that I let Grimes continue?
Anya shook her head, disconcerted by the savage look in Connolly's eyes. This was a different man from the one she'd had dinner with back in Jerusalem. Still, she hesitated. searching her mind for an argument that might sway him, until a hand fell on her arm. She glanced over and found that Ephraim had caught up with her. There was fear in his eyes, a sense that they were perilously close to a precipice, and one false step could send them plunging. He inclined his head, just the slightest nod back in the direction of the camp. She let Ephraim lead her away, looking back over her shoulder as the prisoner was dragged to the remains of a column and tied there in a seated position, his back to the stone. It wasn't going to take very long for the temperature to rise, and when it did, it was going to turn that cool stone into a blistering furnace. As she walked off, she found herself wondering if she'd done the prisoner any favor at all. From the look in his eyes, he was probably wondering the same thing. The other members of her team were waiting outside her tent when she and Ephraim got back to camp. Susan had apparently been elected spokesperson, and she wasted no time in getting to the point.
I'm sorry, Professor, but we've had enough. It's too dangerous to stay any longer.
You want to leave the expedition?
Several of them nodded.
Yes, we want to return to Jerusalem, today if possible.
I think that's an excellent idea.
They're scared and I don't blame them. I should have sent them home the minute I knew there was going to be opposition to what we were doing. Now the question is, will Connolly let them leave? Only one way to find out. I'll talk to Connolly and see if he can spare one of the land cruisers to take you all back to Jerusalem.
To keep the students occupied, Ephraim put them to work excavating a corner of one of the smaller buildings on the south side of the dig site. Anya worked along with them, enjoying the opportunity to get her hands dirty. Despite their real fear, the students were eager to work a fresh site, and Anya was reminded of the thrill of discovery that had gotten her into archaeology in the first place. About an hour after they started, Anya excused herself and went to find Connolly. He was in his tent, as she had expected, and as usual, Grimes was with him.
With your permission, I'd like to send the graduate students back to the city.
Why?
We've put them in danger by bringing them along. We don't really need them. Ephraim and I can handle the excavation, and we can use the security team to help move any heavy objects when we investigate the next site.
Grimes?
Absolutely not.
Excuse me?
I said no.
And why is that?
Because we do need them. Otherwise, you wouldn't have brought them along in the first place.
We don't need them, not enough to put their lives in danger. Or are you forgetting that we were attacked last night?
And we dealt with the attackers appropriately, or are you forgetting that?
I haven't forgotten, but that doesn't mean there aren't more of them out there waiting for their own opportunity.
Exactly my point. What if they are out there, watching us even now? Sending your colleagues back to Jerusalem alone could well result in their being ambushed along the way.
So have one or two of the security personnel escort them back.
And leave us more vulnerable than we are now? Not a chance. They'll just have to stick it out here with the rest of us until we're finished.
I think they should be able to decide whether to take the risk or not.
No. I won't have them injured traveling back to Jerusalem on their own. I won't have that on my conscience, Anya.
What conscience?
I have to listen to Martin's recommendations, Anya. I'm sure you understand. For now, we stay together.
Further argument wouldn't get her anywhere, so Anya returned to the excavation area. She pulled Ephraim aside and let him know that they were all going to be here a while. Together, they broke the news to the rest of the group. As expected, they weren't happy. Unable to ease the camp tension, Anya decided to see the prisoner, although she felt useless. There was clearly nothing she could do for him either. Like Grimes, she wanted some answers, but his approach was doomed to failure. A little honey would go a lot further. To that end, she brought with her one of their freeze-dried meals, already reconstituted with hot water and a bottle of Gatorade. The prisoner had been in the sun for hours now and was no doubt in need of both. Beck was on guard duty when she arrived. Of all of Grimes' security team, Anya liked him the least. He was a hard-faced, arrogant pain in the butt who considered anyone not part of the security team to be beneath him. Anya wasn't the type to suffer such fools gladly. He watched her approach with a smirk, his eyes traveling up and down her body.
Where do you think you're going?
Anya gave him the same head-to-toe assessment, but let her disdain for him plainly show. He flushed and stood a little straighter.
I'm going to talk to the man I captured.
No one's allowed to talk to the prisoner. Boss's orders.
Anya glanced beyond Beck at the prisoner. He sat with his back to the pillar, his legs splayed out before him. He seemed to be unconscious, his head hanging limply against his chest. There was little doubt their voices would carry the short distance to where he was tied up, but he hadn't even lifted his head to see what was going on. In fact, he hadn't moved at all since she'd arrived. Not good.
When was the last time he had water?
Beck just stared at her. Anya shoved past Beck and went to the prisoner. He didn't move, didn't give any indication that he was even aware of her presence. She put the food and water down next to him, then used both hands to gently lift his face up off his chest so she could take a look. What she saw was alarming. His face was turning red, and his lips were chapped and peeling. His eyes rolled in their sockets, unable to focus on her. He was barely conscious. If she hadn't been holding his head upright, he wouldn't have been able to on his own. Knowing how hot it could get at a dig site, Anya always carried a small tube of sunblock in her pocket. She pulled it out and squeezed some over her hand. As she spread it on the prisoner's face and neck, Beck hurried over.
What are you doing?
When was the last time he had anything to drink?
Last night, maybe?
Shit.
Anya uncapped the Gatorade and poured a little between the man's lips.
No.
At first, it just dribbled back out. But then he seemed to come back to himself and managed to swallow it. Anya gave him a little more.
Facile. Petite, petite gorge.
In French, Anya told the man to take small sips. He nodded slightly in understanding.
Right. French it is, then.
Anya had a small sense of satisfaction, but she didn't let it show. Right now, she was more concerned with keeping the prisoner from getting heat stroke. Clearly, he wasn't used to being in the hot desert sun like this. Beck sauntered back over to his guard station. He was still within earshot, but that was better than having him standing there all jumpy with a gun in his hand. She didn't need anyone having any accidents today. The prisoner consumed almost half of the Gatorade.
Mieux?
Anya asked if he felt better.
Oui, merci.
Anya glanced over at Beck. His attention was elsewhere. She fed the prisoner a few bites of the food she'd brought.
Quel est votre nom?
Anya asked for his name, but rather than replying, he simply shook his head. Apparently, he wasn't willing to go down that road yet.
Comme tu veux.
Anya told the prisoner that she couldn't do anything for him unless he cooperated and trusted her, and that she was far more agreeable than the rest of this bunch. He still didn't reply. She gave him a few more bites. Then she helped him drink. When he was done, he leaned his head back against the pillar behind him and closed his eyes. Anya gathered her things and stood.
Si vous changez d'avis, demandez Anya.
She told the prisoner that if he changed his mind, to ask for her.
No one else is going to stick their neck out for you, that's for sure.
It was well after dark when she climbed back up the ridge, another bottle of Gatorade and a rehydrated meal in one hand, her flashlight in the other. She was expecting to be stopped by whoever had sentry duty at this point, but she reached the ruins without anyone calling out to her.
They're just keeping a low profile. Don't want to give away their position.
But it was more than that, as she discovered moments later when she reached the place where the prisoner had been secured. No one was there. Someone had come to get him.
Grimes.
Anya quickly headed down the ridgeline to the camp below. She made her way through the tents until she came to the larger one. There was a guard stationed outside, Gardner, the scout from the night before, but he waved her inside without a word. Grimes and Connolly were bent over the camp table. A large-scale topographical map of the surrounding area was spread out before them. It looked like they'd been discussing the expedition's next target. Several red X's were marked on the map, presumably locations they had either selected for themselves or obtained from Ephraim. The prisoner wasn't anywhere in sight. Connolly noticed Anya first and gestured her forward.
Ah, Anya. You're just the person we need. We're trying to decide where we're headed next, and...
Where is he?
I beg your pardon? Where is who?
The prisoner.
We turned him over to the authorities.
The authorities?
We reached out by radio earlier and brought them up to speed on the situation. When their two officers arrived, they took statements from us, and based on the strength of those statements, they arrested him. I doubt he'll be troubling us for a long time.
Rest assured, Ms. Creed, that I kept your name out of things as best I could. I know how little you like the spotlight outside of your duties as a host of that cable show you work for.
Is there some reason I wasn't informed?
Informed? Why?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe for the simple reason that I'm the one he tried to kidnap?
I'm sorry, Miss Creed, but you were hired to help translate the scroll and for your expertise in uncovering artifacts. I don't presume to tell you how to do your job. I would appreciate it if you would refrain from telling me how to do mine.
Has the embassy been informed?
The embassy?
Yes, the embassy. An attempt was made to kidnap a U.S. citizen on foreign soil. That's a terrorist act, and it makes sense to give the embassy a heads up, in case they try to grab someone else.
You can't be serious. If this was an international plot to harm U.S. citizens, don't you think these so-called terrorists would have gone after Mitchell first? Or do you somehow think that being the host of a cable television show makes you a more likely target than one of the world's richest men?
Of course I don't, but I don't see...
I don't care what you see or don't see, Anya. The decision is made and the police have already collected their man, so there seems little point in arguing about it further. Now, if there is anything else...
Anya recognized a dismissal when she heard one.
Grimes said they were going to be charging the Frenchman with kidnapping. How can they do that without some kind of a statement from the person he actually tried to kidnap, namely me? It just doesn't add up.
Anya stopped and bent down, fiddling with the lace of her hiking boot as if it had come undone and needed to be retied. While doing so, she angled her body slightly and used the position to glance back in the direction she had come, checking that no one was watching her. Satisfied that they weren't, she set off again, but this time slipped between the tents toward the vehicles parked a short distance beyond. The camp was only so big. Nothing more than just a few tents and the fire pit, really. It would be fairly obvious if Grimes was holding the prisoner captive in one of the tents, but it would have been a relatively easy matter for him to take the prisoner out into the desert and get rid of him when no one else was paying attention. The lights from the camp didn't reach this far, but there was enough moonlight for Anya to find the trucks without difficulty. She put a hand on the hood of each vehicle as she passed them, looking for the warmth that might signal that a vehicle had been used recently, but each one was cold. In the moonlight, she didn't see any additional tire tracks that would indicate any of the vehicles had moved since their arrival the day before. Anya repeated her circuit, but this time she moved from the rear of one vehicle to the next, peering into the cargo compartments of each. Anya found what she was looking for in the third truck she came to. In the dim light, she could see a large, wrapped bundle in the middle of the gear. She reached out and tried the door handle. It was unlocked. She eased the door open with one hand, ready to slap the other over the interior light to keep from giving herself away. But it didn't come on. Maybe it was broken. She reached into the cargo space and touched the bundle and its smooth, slick surface. She recognized the sound of the heavy-duty bubble wrap they used to secure specimens for shipment. She ran her hands along the object in first one direction and then the other, trying to get a sense of how big it was. It stretched forward beyond her reach, so it was at least 3 feet long, possibly more. It was also roughly as wide around as a person's shoulders.
You need to be sure.
Anya used the tip of the blade to carefully cut through the wrappings closest to her. The sword was long, the space limited, and it took her a few minutes of awkward work before she had managed to cut a large enough gash to peel it back. With her sword in one hand, she reached out again with the other. She felt a man's boot, and then, as she reached higher, his leg. Even without a light, she was confident that she had found her missing prisoner.
Grimes lied about the prisoner's death without batting an eye. What else is he lying about? What else have I missed?
With both hands free, Anya spent a moment securing the bubble wrap back around the corpse's feet as best she could. In the light of day, it would be obvious someone had tampered with the bundle, but it should pass a casual inspection for the time being. She stepped back and gently eased the rear door closed behind her. The silence about the camp seemed oppressive, dangerous even. and as she made her way back toward the tents, she couldn't shake the feeling that her lack of information was going to get someone else killed. She needed to know more. Rather than going back to her tent, she changed direction and crept through the darkness toward Connolly's tent. The guards were posted on the outer perimeter of the camp, and so she was able to get close behind the structure without being seen. Light from somewhere inside cast shadows against the canvas walls, and with its help she could tell that there were at least two men inside the tent. She assumed they were still Grimes and Connolly.
Didn't tell us anything worthwhile. We still don't know who they are or what they want.
Of course we do. They want the staff just as we do. Since we know that, it doesn't really matter who they are.
I'm not so sure about that. The fact that they went after Cree before the map just doesn't feel right. Why would they do that?
Maybe they want that mysterious sword you've been talking about.
I'm not making it up. I know what I saw.
Relax, I'm not suggesting otherwise. The question is, what are we going to do about it?
For now, nothing other than keep an eye on her. But once we find the staff, I suggest you use its power to get her to tell you everything she knows about the sword. Who knows? Perhaps you'll come away with two artifacts of interest.
All right, then. How do you propose we should proceed?
I think it's time to end this farce. With an enemy on our tail, it's better if we cut to the chase and get the staff. Put Creed and the professor on figuring out the location mentioned in that stanza. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
What about the others?
If they get in the way, get rid of them. We can always concoct some story later about an accident if need be.
Ephraim. Wake up, Ephraim.
Anya brought the older man out of his sleep with a jolt. A look of fear crossed his face before he realized who it was kneeling next to him in the darkness.
Anya, what are you...
She quickly covered his mouth with her hand and leaned in close.
Shh.
She only let go when she felt him nod in understanding. The weak light of Ephraim's portable lamp beneath the covers of his sleeping bag came on. The light allowed them to see each other's faces, but wouldn't easily be seen outside of the tent.
What's going on? Are we under attack again?
No, it's worse.
Anya quickly told Ephraim what she had overheard. Ephraim listened quietly until she got to the part about the staff.
A staff? You're sure that's what he said?
I'm positive. I don't have a clue what he's talking about, though, do you? I don't remember seeing anything about a staff in the scroll.
God help us.
Talk to me, Ephraim. What's he referring to?
Aaron's staff. The staff of Judea. That has to be it. It must have been the treasure referred to in one of the stanzas.
The staff of Judea?
When the Jewish people were captive in Egypt, the Lord sent Moses and his brother Aaron to confront the Pharaoh and demand the release of the Israelites. As a symbol of his authority, God gave them each a staff of miraculous power. Moses' staff had the power over the natural elements, and he used it to part the Red Sea and draw water from a stone during the Exodus. Aaron's, on the other hand, was much more potent.
You do realize there's no scientific evidence for the parting of the Red Sea, right?
When the brothers confronted the Pharaoh, he demanded to see a miracle. So Aaron threw down his staff and it turned into a snake. When the Pharaoh's sorcerers duplicated the act with their own staves, Aaron's staff attacked and swallowed them all. When this was still not enough to persuade the Pharaoh, Aaron called upon the power of the staff a second time and ushered in the 10 plagues of Egypt. Later, after Jerusalem was restored, the staff was used by the Davidic kings as a scepter and stored in the temple. Legend has it that the staff miraculously vanished from the temple hours before it was destroyed.
Just like the treasure.
Yes. We cannot allow the staff to fall into Connolly's hands, no matter what.
Agreed. Right now, though, we need to get you and the rest of the team out of here.
How are you going to do that? You're just one woman, Anya.
I'll handle it. Don't worry. Yeah, you'll handle it. How? If I can get the iPad with the translated verses away from Connolly, then I can use it to find the staff myself. And once I do, I'll turn it over to Rue for him to safeguard.
Ephraim finally turned to pack his things.
Unless it's extremely personal, just leave it. We don't have time to secure all the gear, and leaving it in place might help disguise that you're gone until the last possible moment. The bigger head start you get, the better.
The plan was simple.
You'll be in charge of getting your students ready to go. While you're doing that, I'll sneak around to the far side of the camp and create a diversion, drawing the security team in my direction. You load everyone into the nearest vehicle and head for the closest city, while I circle back around to Connolly's tent to steal the iPad containing the scroll translations. Once I have them, I'll be able to escape the same way you will in another stolen Land Cruiser. Remember, we need to look like everything's fine. We're just two friends out for a casual walk, nothing to be worried or concerned about. Look as normal as you can.
They left the tent, strolling at a comfortable pace.
Anya, did I tell you about the dig I conducted in Laodicea a few months ago?
Was that the one where on the first night you walked into the wrong tent?
Yes, I guess I did tell you.
Oh, how embarrassing.
Don't remind me. Well, I need to check on my students. Good night, Anya.
Good night, Ephraim.
They then went their separate ways, Ephraim slipping inside a tent to talk to the others, while Anya headed off into the darkness at the edge of camp, where they had dug a pit latrine earlier that afternoon. She paused in the darkness, waited a few minutes to be certain she hadn't been followed, then quickly changed direction and headed back toward where the vehicles were parked. She needed a diversion, one big enough to attract the attention of everyone in the camp. After a moment's hard thinking, she had the answer. After the surprise attack the night before, Grimes had set up roving patrols and ordered that two men be patrolling the camp perimeter on a rotating schedule all night long. This was both a blessing and a curse, in Anya's view. It would give her time to gather what she needed from the parked vehicles once she was sure the patrol had already passed by, but it also made moving in the darkness that much more difficult, because she couldn't know where the patrol was at any given time. She approached the parked vehicles openly and at an unhurried pace. She had a story ready, should she need it. The lantern in her tent had run out of batteries, and she needed some new ones. Since she had helped direct how the supplies were loaded onto the trucks, she knew batteries could be found in most of the vehicles. Thankfully, the guards were elsewhere at the moment, and Anya was quickly able to find what she needed. Duffel bag in hand, she locked the door, closed it, and turned around.
Identify yourself!
Anya froze in place. Gardner appeared seconds later, his gun in hand, and pointed at her.
Oh, don't shoot!
Gardner looked over her shoulder at the vehicle and then down at the bag in her hands before he dropped the barrel of his gun. He didn't put it away, but at least it wasn't pointing directly at her anymore.
What are you doing out here?
So much for the batteries alibi. No one needs a duffel bag to carry just a few batteries. Time for Plan B. One of the GPR units was giving us trouble this afternoon, so I'm going to switch out the pulse induction units with these spares and see if that solves the problem.
The ground-penetrating radar, or GPR, devices were some of the most important equipment they had brought with them on the expedition. The devices were also rather temperamental, a fact everyone on the dig knew at this point. Anya prayed that Gardner wouldn't ask to look in the bags.
You want me to carry that for you?
Carry what? Oh, the duffel bag, idiot. But why? Is he trying to trick me?
As he waited for her answer, Gardner smiled tentatively.
Ooh, now I get it. Oh, no thanks. I can handle this.
Well, no reason you should have to carry the bag when I'm perfectly willing.
I couldn't pull you away from your duty, Gardner. What would Grimes do if he found out?
No, please. I insist.
Gardner slung his weapon over his shoulder and reached out.
Sure.
Anya passed over the bag.
Hey, these aren't so heavy.
Gardner hefted the bag up and down a few inches.
Heavy, no, but they are very delicate. Be careful, please.
Oops. Sorry. My bad.
Gardner moved his arm outward a few inches, holding the bag away from his body so that it wouldn't bump against the side of his leg.
Better?
Yes, thank you.
So, where are we taking it?
Ephraim and I will be working on it in his tent, with the help of some of the students.
Okay.
They were almost to the tent when Gardner got a call from the radio on his belt.
Command to Eagle One.
Gardner carefully passed the bag back to Anya before pulling the radio from his belt.
Eagle One here. Go, Command.
Gardner inclined his head back in the direction of his patrol route, indicating that he was headed off. Anya mouthed a quick thank you to him, and then he was striding briskly away. Anya glanced around. Satisfied, she hefted the bag and quickly started walking on a diagonal course away from camp. It was pretty dark, the thin sliver of moon barely providing enough light for her to see where to put her feet, but she wasn't complaining. If she couldn't see where she was going, the sentries would have an equally hard time seeing her. She walked about 100 yards away from camp and then began looking for a good spot to set up. A long, flat table of rock that was roughly waist high seemed to be the best bet. Unzipping the bag, she sorted through the items by feel, setting them in a semicircle around her on the rock. After that, it was simply a matter of putting it all together. She put her flashlight inside the bag and turned it on, dimming most of the light. She took a blasting cap out of the bag and put it on the rock in front of her. It was a very small charge, used in excavation work to break apart rocks that were just too big to move by hand and would do nicely for what she had in mind. She attached a detonation cord to the blasting cap and then ran the cord to the timer. She set the timer for 10 minutes. Next, she took the boxes of spare ammunition out of the duffel, opened them, and one by one poured their contents on top of the blasting cap until it was buried under a veritable pile of ammunition intended for the security team's MP4s. The pièce de résistance was the 3 boxes of shells for a combat shotgun. She stopped and surveyed her handiwork. It looked good. When the blasting cap was triggered, it should cook off some of the ammunition directly on top of it, which would then cause the rest of the pile to go off as well. Within seconds, it would sound like there was a full-scale war going on as round after round went off. As long as it gave Ephraim and his charges enough time to escape. One last check to be sure the det cord was connected properly to the timer, and then she set the countdown for 10 minutes, hit the switch, and got the heck out of there. It took Anya 7 minutes to reach the tent they'd chosen as their rendezvous point. She hadn't seen nor heard anyone on her way back. The rest of the camp seemed to have settled in for the night. She slipped inside to find Ephraim waiting with the rest of their group.
All right. Everyone know the drill?
There were nods all around. Anya checked her watch.
In about 3 minutes, you're going to hear a lot of noise. Don't worry, it's nothing that can hurt you. As soon as you hear it, though, I want you all to head across camp to where the land cruisers are parked. Take the last one in line. The keys are above the visor.
What about you? How are you going to get out?
I'll be about 5 minutes behind you in one of the other vehicles. Don't worry.
Why don't you just come with us now?
No. Someone needs to draw them off your tail, and I've got the best chance of pulling it off. You guys stay close to Ephraim, and I'll see you all shortly.
Anya smiled at the sound. Tony was waiting at the front of the tent. His keen eyes and reflexes would serve them better than Ephraim's as they navigated away from camp, and so he was to be the first out the door. Anya tapped him on the shoulder.
Go!
The others followed behind him in a steady stream until it was only Anya and Ephraim left inside the tent.
I have changed my mind. It's too dangerous. Leave the map and come with us. We can worry about the stuff later.
This is our one and only chance. You know it as well as I do. The minute Connolly gets his hands on the staff, it will disappear into his personal collection. Our only chance is to beat him to it.
The security team was now responding to what they must have thought was a major attack. They didn't have much time.
I'll be fine. Go, now!
All right, all right.
But instead of leaving, Ephraim dug into his pocket, pulled out a few folded sheets of paper, and thrust them into Anya's hands.
Here, take this. You're going to need it.
What is it?
Legend says the staff is secure inside the walls of the fortress Malach. While you were gone, I wrote down everything I could remember about the legend, along with the translated verse. This might help if you get there first.
Thank you. Truly. Now get out of here and get those students of yours to safety.
Right. Good luck.
And with that, Ephraim pushed out of the tent and into the night. Anya gave him a moment. Then she followed suit. She slipped between the tents,
heading for the one shared by Grimes and Connolly. Knowing that Ephraim had reached the others, Anya cautiously approached her employer's tent. The lanterns were on and the flaps thrown back, giving her a good look inside. It seemed to be empty. She glanced around, sensing the trap but not seeing anything concrete to move her suspicions in one direction or the other.
Where are they? Does it matter? No, probably not.
Anya slipped inside and headed directly for the steamer trunk she had seen Connolly remove the iPad from the night before. She reached to open the lid, only to find it was locked.
Good thing I brought the key.
Anya slid the tip of her sword into the seam where the lid met the chest, and then pushed down sharply. She dug through the contents, throwing aside what she wasn't interested in, until she found the leather iPad case. She unzipped it, checked to make sure the device was inside, and then closed it again. Anya stood, turned around, and found herself staring down the barrel of a gun.
Going somewhere, Ms. Creed?
Holy shit, of course! Grimes was the gunman at the Shrine of the Book!
Anya's expression must have given her away.
Figured it out, have you? Took you long enough. I thought you were supposed to be smart, Creed.
Grimes threw his head back slightly as he laughed. That was all Anya needed. Anya hurled the sword and dove to the side. The sword skewered Grimes' shoulder. He dropped his gun. Anya scrambled to her feet. The sword reappeared in her hand. She kicked Grimes' gun into the shadows, then moved around him in a wide circle toward the entrance. He barely noticed, too busy trying to staunch the flow of blood from his wound.
Hey, where you going?
She nearly ran over Hamilton and Beck as they raced to respond to the sound of the pistol shot from inside the tent. Instead of stopping, she pointed back over her shoulder.
Hurry! Grimes is holding them off so I can get this to Mr. Connolly, but he needs help.
Hamilton and Beck raced to Connolly's tent. Anya kept running.
Kill her!
She jigged to the right behind a pair of tents, taking her out of Grimes' line of sight. She had to get to the vehicles. By the time she reached the edge of camp where the SUVs were parked, Grimes had used the radio to sound the alert. She fetched up against a fair-sized boulder and scrambled behind it, squatting down low and trying to catch her breath. The gunman couldn't see her anymore, so most of the shots were wild, though one or two ricocheted off the stone she was hiding behind.
I have to get to a land cruiser and get out of here. Grimes, of course, knows that.
One minute, Anya was curled up tight behind a rock, hidden from view, and then the area was lit up as bright as day by headlights, pinning her in place.
You've got 10 seconds to come out, or I'm going to send my men in there with guns blazing, Creed. Do us all a favor and stay hidden, will you? It will be so much more fun that way. 10, 9.
Oh, I can guess what Grimes will do to me if he manages to capture me.
8, 7.
Now that she could see it, the rock she was hiding behind was bigger than she thought.
6.
The ground directly in front of where she was hiding ran straight for about 20 yards before it dipped sharply out of sight. She had no idea what was beyond that point, but right now it was about the only option open to her.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Time's up. Here we come.
The vehicles headed in her direction. It was now or never. Anya took off running in a straight line directly away from the boulder. She made the first 5 yards without being seen. By the time Anya hit the halfway point, the floodlights of one of the vehicles caught her.
There she is, over there!
The SUV swerved to keep her in sight. Pain flared along her right biceps as a bullet creased her skin, causing her to stumble. The motion actually saved her life as the gunner put several more rounds through the space she would have been in if she hadn't faltered. She caught herself against a nearby rock before pushing off and charging in the opposite direction, even as the surface of the rock was riddled with hot lead. Thanks to the floodlights behind her, Anya could see that the path she was following disappeared into darkness on the other side of the dip. The trucks behind her had to swerve to avoid the boulder field she was moving through now, and for a moment she ran out of the light. She raced forward and reached the drop. Then she continued down in a partially controlled slip and slide, kicking out chunks of loose earth and stone from the slope as she fought to keep herself upright and moving. The truck stopped somewhere above her as doors slammed. With a jolt, she found herself at the bottom of the slope. From what little moonlight there was, She could see that she had come down onto a wide, even path about the same width as a road. She was standing in a dry riverbed, the sand packed solid beneath her feet. She didn't think, just trusted her gut and took off to the left. A glance over her shoulder showed them coming down the slope after her, their flashlights bobbing in the darkness. Anya chanced to glance behind her, but didn't see anything. Whatever it was very close now. Another glance back, and this time she could see dark forms on horseback charging toward her. The first rider passed her on the left, the second on the right. She had a moment to notice the dark desert clothes they were wearing, and then the third rider burst out of the shadows behind her. A muscled arm swooped around her waist and lifted her off the ground, her legs still churning uselessly beneath her. For a moment, Anya fought against the arm of the man who held her, but the idea of falling beneath the hooves of the horse held little appeal. She stopped and swung her leg up and over the horse's neck so that she was now seated in front of the rider. She dug her fingers into the horse's mane and held on.